Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 Co-op Radio, CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, April the 27th, 2012, and it is the World Week for Animals in Laboratories this week. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here by my co-host, Alyssa Ray.
Hello.
And Alon Cohen.
Hey there.
And our control room tech trainee, Tim Aretz. Welcome, everyone. Animal Voices is Vancouver's and Western Canada's only animal advocacy and vegan radio program, bringing you all the animal and vegan-related news, events, interviews, lifestyle, and commentary that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and internationally. We at Animal Voices encourage the movement toward a world in which animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the same rights that humans take for granted. This program can be heard every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and is also streamed live at coopradio.org and available as podcasts on iTunes and animalvoices.org after airing. For our first interview today, we have Sophie Middleton on the show, who is a volunteer with a local animal activist organization, Liberation BC. She comes to us today to speak to us about the annual cow ribbing campaign that Liberation BC puts on every year around Mother's Day to honor all mothers, especially dairy cows. The cow ribbon is a creative idea and tactic to bring awareness to the issues of cow mothers, and I look forward to speaking with her about this in about 16 minutes. And for our feature interview today, we have the world's foremost authority on the orangutans to speak with us about the dire situation in Borneo and Sumatra today, where the orangutans are in danger of being forced to extinction. We have Dr. Barute Mary Galdikas on the show, who has spent 40 years studying the orangutans and is one of the founders of Orangutan Foundation International, a not-for-profit organization whose mission is to support the conservation, protection, and understanding of orangutans and their rainforest habitat while caring for ex-captive orangutan orphans as they make their way back into the forest. We are lucky to have such an expert on the show today, and I am particularly interested in hearing about the whole palm oil issue that you may already be aware of, in that the destruction of the orangutans' rainforests are being replaced with palm oil plantations and thereby destroying the orangutans. More about that coming up midway in the show. So I wanted to give our local listeners a quick update on the VEG. If you remember, I reviewed this brand new cruelty-free vegan egg substitute on our April 6th show, which has proven to replicate the taste and texture of a chicken's egg more closely and convincingly than any other product. At the time of the show, the VEG was not available in the Lower Mainland for purchase, but I've just discovered that it is now available at our local vegan store, Carmivore, in New Westminster for purchase. And of course, you can also mail order it from there at carmivore.ca. That's with a K. I think I will definitely be picking up one next time I stop by the Carmivore store. And now, Alon, would you like to talk to us about the World Week for Animals in Laboratories?
Definitely. So this week has been the World Week for Animals in Labs, which is a week of actions aimed at speaking out against the abhorrent use of animals in testing and research and kind of expose the relationships that humans have with these non-human critters in the laboratories. So I just wanted to give a highlight of some of the actions that have been done this week. And so in order to give some background, in 2003, the European Parliament actually voted to ban all testing of cosmetics and their ingredients on animals by 2009, and crucially, to end the sales of all cosmetics and toiletries containing ingredients tested on animals by March 2013. However, under pressure from influential players in the cosmetics industry, the European Commission is considering postponing the 2013 deadline, perhaps indefinitely. A number of EU countries have already declared support for the ban, but shockingly, the UK has refused to take a position, and the USA and also Canada don't have ban on animal testing in cosmetics. So, in order to highlight these events that have occurred, the Humane Society International has joined with the UK-based company Lush Cosmetics to launch an unprecedented global campaign to end animal testing for cosmetics. The HSI Lush campaign has been rolled out simultaneously in 48 countries and more than 700 Lush stores in India, South Korea, Australia, New Zealand, Europe, Russia, Canada, and the US. The Humane Society International supports the Leaping Bunny logo by the Coalition for Consumer Information on Cosmetics. To spearhead the new campaign, Lush staged a demonstration at one of its stores in the UK. The demo reenacted cosmetic procedures on a 24-year-old woman, and it's actually quite shocking to see the pictures and the video. Jacqueline Trade's eyes streamed with irritants, her arms bled when she tried to resist needles poking at her. She was humiliated and restrained for 10 hours, all the while shocked onlookers took pictures on their phones. Lush campaign manager Tamsin Oman said, "The ironic thing is that if it was a beagle in the window and we were doing all these things to it, we'd have the police and the RSPCA here in minutes." But although animal testing for cosmetics was banned in the EU 3 years ago, it is still legal in Britain to sell products animal tests in other parts of the world, including the USA and Canada. In China, such testing is actually a legal requirement. And actually, we'll be posting this video hopefully on our website. You can actually take a look at it. But of course, there is a warning. It's quite a shocking and graphic protest. Probably by far the most graphic I've ever seen regarding this. I don't know if you've actually seen this online, Alyssa?
I haven't yet. No.
Yeah, it's definitely something that's worth looking out. But of course, you know, these kind of things need a trigger warning for anyone who is kind of sensitive or feels sensitive towards things such as violence targeted towards women. Because this is not this was a protest that definitely was quite shocking towards people. And of course, this public spectacle is something to be raised in and of itself. The logistics and, of course, whether it's actually just to hold such a protest outside, given the fact that it was so graphic for onlookers and it was in a public display, is something to actually think about. But definitely, you take a look at it on our website and see for yourself and see what you think. But again, there is a trigger warning for it. And, of course, this week is the final week for the membership drive, and I think Alyssa has actually something to say about that.
I do. I just want to share a bit first about what cooperatives mean to me. I actually work full-time at a cooperative, a local Vancouver-based cooperative, and I spend a lot of time volunteering for the station as well. And it is just, whoa, sorry about that. It's just so deep in my heart and deep in my ethics that we are contributing our time and our effort, and if not, our money, to support amazing locally grown groups that of people that are working together to make a difference. And this cooperative is it's about sharing. And yeah, I just wanted to say what co-op means to me. I've been involved for a couple years, and just the open door policy that if you want to get involved, if you want to have your voice heard, if you have something to say, there's probably a show you can get involved in, and there's amazing training opportunities here, and it's really like anyone who wants to have a voice can come here and be heard, and that means so much to me. I don't have to, you know, go to school to be here and do this and learn these amazing skills, so it's really expanded my life, and I've learned so much being here, and I feel so honored to be a part of it. Vancouver Co-op Radio tells untold stories and showcases local artists and activists, and covers issues and events from perspectives of the social movements addressing them, rather than the mainstream media is usually trying to keep a somewhat objective perspective and reporting from the outside. Here on Co-op, you can hear the voices of the people who are actually working for these issues. And of course, a vibrant democracy depends on community access to a broad range of information. And Animal Voices is just one of the many outstanding and informative programs on this station. This is an amazing local resource for these kinds of information and independent news and views all year round. And of course, a co-op relies on its members. And I'm a member of many local co-ops, from food co-ops to car co-ops. And I think this Vancouver Co-op Radio is just such an integral, central part of the city. And we all need to do what we can to support it. So the question is, why become a member? Well, because Co-op is only as strong as its members. And of course, our memberships help us join our voices together so that us at Animal Voices can continue to speak out on behalf of the voiceless who need us. We've offered such amazing programming over the last year, and we really can't do it without the help of our members. Some of the stories, like, they have such a broad range. We've talked about, of course, the horrors of farmed animals quite a bit on the show, and of course their voices are not covered in mainstream media and they need to be heard. And from the plight of exotic birds as pets, the dangers of naval testing to whales and other marine life, animals in captivity fighting back. Of course, we talked a lot about the seal hunt in Canada. We have just covered so many issues on the show, such a broad range of voices, and we really need public support to keep doing what we're doing, of course. And everyone needs an extra card in their wallet, right? So that's the main reason to give.
Best reason.
Yes. We actually have, our goal has been upped this year. The station has asked us to raise $1,000 for the year. Each show on the station is responsible for contributing its bit. And our goal is $1,000. And every little bit helps us reach that goal. And I would like to also say one of the cool benefits, besides, you know, maybe getting involved, once you're a member, you can, the door's open to you, you can attend an orientation or participate in the annual general meeting. But some perks for people who pledge their support today, we actually have some amazing books to give away. And yeah, you can have your name entered, and we'll just pick from everyone who gives during this during our pledge drive this season. So I want to talk about the books. Hopefully they'll incentivize people to pick up the phone. One is Kinship and Killing, Animals in World Religion. We have Wild Justice, The Moral Lives of Animals. Becoming Vegan, The Complete Guide to Adopting a Healthy Plant-Based Diet, which probably a lot of our listeners already have, but it's a great gift and a book to pass on to people who are learning. The Happy Herbivore Cookbook.
Excellent book.
Yeah, awesome. I haven't seen that one yet. Eat Vegan on $4 a Day. And we just got in studio today an exciting new book called The Inspired Vegan, a new cookbook by Bryant Terry, which is like soul food, and he includes like music in it and everything like that. It looks really great. So those are the books we'll be giving away within the next month to people who support us, or the next couple weeks, I guess. And today is a beautiful day to give. We're asking you to become a member and do what you can to support us. So it's 604-684-8494 or cooperadio.org. It's super easy to become a member. You can give really anything you want, and we're really encouraging people to become sustaining monthly members, or you can choose any amount you want to give. So please call us today, 604-684-8494.
Bring the money in. Bring the money in. We won't have no dough to spend until you bring that money in.
Co-op Radio's Membership Drive. Join us for special programming featuring the best that Co-op Radio has to offer. In-depth interviews, alternative music, local arts and culture. Call in and become a member and join one of Canada's first and longest-running community radio stations. Call 604-684-8494. That's Co-op Radio's Membership Drive. Join us.
Money's the root of all evil.
Put a nickel in the pot, boy.
It's true, I've found.
Put a dime in the pot,
but
boy.
But this money's for a real good cause. So
cents.
Everybody stick around.
Not on a quarter.
Bring the money in. Bring the money in. We won't have no dough to spend until you bring that money in.
You're listening to Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. This is 102.7 FM CFRO. This is Animal Voices, and I have some upcoming events for you. So first, on Sunday, April 28th, it's the No Harm Dog Walk and Vegan Picnic, presented by Stop UBC Animal Research. It's happening in three locations across the province of BC. The first one is Vancouver. That's in Locarno Park at noon on Sunday, in Kamloops at Pioneer Park at 2 p.m., and in Victoria at Fairfield Plaza at 2 p.m. Bring your four-legged friends, vegan snacks, frisbee, the kids, a ukulele, hoops, anything you want. Come and have fun at the vegan picnic. Bring your dog. What it is, it's a fundraiser for Stop UBC Animal Research, where pledges are raised by those who walk with their dogs. And all the money that's raised is given to Stop and the Humane Charities Seal of Approval program. For details and pledge forms, contact Shamrock Studio at shaw.ca. A few other events coming up. Later in May, the Meatless Meetup is hosting a vegan cooking demonstration class. It's only $15. That's pretty much the best price you can get to learn about cooking. It's a couple hours, 11 to 1, on Saturday, May 19th. It's at Granville and West 8th in Vancouver. They'll be teaching you how to cook Thai curry, homemade veggie meat, sautéed rainbow veggies with quinoa, and for dessert, a pumpkin tapioca. So for more information, you can Google Vancouver Meatless Meetup and sign up on the page there.
I've heard really good things about these demonstrations, actually. Lily, who does them, is getting a lot of great feedback from people, including one email we got this week that said that from an omnivore that said, wow, you're really teaching me how to learn how to make different things, right? So
yeah.
Great.
Yeah, it's really a lot about learning to cook is just a lot of the formulas. Like once you know how to make a soup, you can pretty much make any soup. I'm just playing with the flavors and stuff. So yeah, that looks like a good workshop. I wanted to mention that EPIC is coming up. That is the Sustainable Living Expo, and that's May 11th to 13th at the Vancouver Convention Center. I'm mentioning it because a lot of, a few groups anyway that we know who support animals and vegetarian lifestyle will be there. One is Liberation BC, and they'll have a table, as well as Earth Save Canada. And a couple.
I'll be there with LibBC.
Oh, awesome.
On Sunday.
I was there. I was there last year. I should do that again. That's so much
fun.
And there's a couple other vegan. Vendors there, Zimt Artisan Chocolates and Organic Lives will also be there. I did want to mention another one. Doxa is coming up in Vancouver. That's the Documentary Film Festival. It's happening May 4th to the 13th. On opening night, they'll be showing an animal-related film that I think will be of interest. I really want to go and think I'm going camping, but I want other people I know to go and tell me about it. It's called Bear 71. It traces the life of a bear in Banff National Park. He or she was captured, collared, and christened Bear 71 at age 3. This mother grizzly was under surveillance for the rest of her life. It's a multimedia project with music and it looks really, really fascinating. So check out Bear 71. That's Friday, May 4th, and doxafestival.ca.
Thank you so much for the events, Alyssa. Today's first interview is with local activist Sophie Middleton. She is a volunteer with the Vancouver nonprofit animal rights organization Liberation BC and comes to us today to speak about the annual Cow Ribbon Campaign put on by Liberation BC, which strives to raise awareness to show support for all mothers. Hello, Sophie, and welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show.
Hi, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming. And so please tell us what this campaign is all about. I believe it's in its third year, is that right? And the Cow Ribbon Campaign encourages support for all mothers. So what does that mean exactly?
Well, the cow ribbon is a symbol of concern for the suffering and abused mothers in the dairy industry. Yeah, you're right, the campaign is in its third year, and we hope that the ribbon prompts people to think about the lives of cow mothers. You know, what would it be like to lose all of your children, one after another, like cows do? What would it be like to never know your children? In order to produce milk, cows must give birth, just like every other mammal. In the dairy industry, calves are taken from their mothers immediately after birth, which is a really emotionally painful, terrible experience. And the mother cows really bellow for days for their missing calves before they give up. You know, mothering instincts are strong in all mammals, just like it is with every species and our species. And newborn male calves that are sent to the slaughterhouse, they can be seen suckling at the hands of the slaughterhouse workers before their throats are slit. Nursing is, of course, one of the ways that babies and mothers bond in our species as well. And a mother's cow's milk is really for baby cows. It's perfectly formulated for their health and their growth. It is not meant for human consumption. And we can see all the health issues that arise from a diet high in dairy products. If you stop and think about it for a second, it's really bizarre that we're the only species that steals the breast milk of another species.
You know, something I actually read this week that I didn't know before is the reason why dairy, i.e. cheese, is so addictive is because there's the hormone in it that it makes baby cows bond to their mothers.
Right.
So it makes them want to stay with their mothers because they need more milk, right? And that's how they bond.
Right.
Well, the same thing happens with humans. You're eating all this cheese and you can't get off it because it's making you want more.
Right.
And that's something I actually hadn't known before. I had known that it's an addictive food item that we're not supposed to be having, but why that was, it's to nurture and encourage that bond between mother and baby.
Mm-hmm.
So what does the cow ribbon symbolize? It's appropriate for Mother's Day. Why Mother's Day? I understand. What is the symbol of the cow ribbon?
Well, it's a symbol of concern for the suffering and abused mothers. We believe it's appropriate for Mother's Day because, it's a time when we're all thinking about motherhood and the mothers in our lives that we love and care about. And we hope that everyone listening will consider advocating for mother cows and all mothers of other species and our own mothers, of course, in this way. It's a really effective educational tool, too, for animal rights activism. Wearing one can open up conversations and opportunities to share information about these issues.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about next. I have had a cow ribbon before, and I find that it's an amazingly effective conversation starter. You know, people at the grocery store will be like, oh, that's cute, what's that? And then you tell them, and then they're like, oh. And I think it's just really planting a seed in people's minds of something that they had never thought about before when you talk about having concern for all mothers, including dairy cows. And again, maybe it's something that they never thought about before. So I'm curious to know what kind of feedback maybe you've received or that you've heard from other people receiving about the cow ribbon.
Yeah, when people ask me about the ribbon, I tend to tell them a bit about how cows live in the dairy industry, just a little bit of an eye-opener. You know, many people have a really idyllic view of dairy farming. You know, no animals are hurt, it's just milking. And they really don't realize that the cows are kept in an almost constant state of pregnancy. They're artificially inseminated. 2 months after the calves are born, the cows are reimpregnated. And in order to get the maximum amount of milk from each cow, calves are taken away from their mothers within days or hours of birth. And the female calves are generally kept to replace the spent dairy cows, and the male ones are sold for beef or veal. And it's really been said that there's a chunk of veal in every glass of milk we drink. Yeah. And cows today, they produce so much milk, about 7 times more than they would in nature.
Growth hormones.
Yeah, well, exactly. It's just, the intensity of factory farming has, breeds them so that the capacity is increased every year, and it's so hard on the cows. And it shortens their productivity, too, all the drugs and everything that's happening to them. After about 4 or 5 years, their productivity goes down, and they're sent to slaughter. And they're, turned into hamburger, but really the natural lifespan of a cow is about 20 to 25 years. So it's really, really distressing how they actually live with infectious bacteria like mastitis, these terrible swollen udders with the pus getting into the milk and, this constant
blood and pus is in your milk. I have a pin that says that. It says got milk, or it says got blood and pus.
Yeah. Yeah, and those kind of infections, too, that come out of the stress of the process are often one of the reasons why cows are culled or destroyed.
It's really interesting to me that it seems like part of popular opinion that veal is kind of publicly regarded as cruel or unnecessarily cruel. I guess this is the Cow Ribbon campaign is trying to get people to kind of make that connection.
Yeah, it's amazing how many people don't make that connection, and I count myself as one of those people that didn't make that connection. I think the ribbon, you know, people, is a great opportunity to open up a respectful conversation and get them thinking. And when people ask me, I often share my own story of extending my circle of compassion. I was vegetarian for about 10 years, and I hadn't taken the step to cut out dairy. And my brother, very helpfully, and I'm saying that ironically, he pointed out the link I was missing. My family came, you know, from a factory farm. I grew up in a factory pig farm. And in the middle of dairy country, so dairy farms are all around us. And even I didn't make that connection that where were the male calves going? Where, you know, what were those white igloo things where the, you know, the calves were restrained in them? You know, what was all that about? And my brother pointed to me, you know, trying to kind of one-up me, you know, that the dairy industry is also the veal industry. It is the same industry. And I, you know, I would never have considered eating veal. I was vehemently, you know, pointing it out to everybody, you know, no, oh, that's so cruel, don't do that. And you know, so how could I eat milk if it's the same thing? How could I have milk chocolate or cheese? And I finally got it. It was embarrassing, but and I finally made that connection, and I've been vegan for the last 10 years, much to my brother's chagrin, I might admit, but I always give him credit for, you know, making that connection for me. And I think, you know, just making the connection for others is something we can do, and it's an opportunity when you see the cow ribbon.
It's definitely a great educative tool, and I think it's just that first step. It's that one thing that needs that is there to start people thinking about it. So it's nearing Mother's Day. How can someone get their cow ribbon for Mother's Day?
Well, all you have to do is come to cowribbon.com to get it. They're available for a minimum donation of $5, but we have no maximum donation, so feel free to, you know, be generous. We will ship them out to you anywhere in the world. And the website, and also our general website for the group, liberationbc.org, has a lot of great information about the campaign. Mm-hmm. It has information about the dairy industry, about veal production, you know, all the circumstances, so you have facts and information to back you up. If people ask you questions, you can, you know, you speak authoritatively. You can also print out some fact sheets. The website has some videos and stories about how the industry works, and also some lovely rescue videos and some great images of and cows and calves from farm sanctuaries, so you won't get too sad about it.
And some Mother's Day e-cards.
That's
like,
right.
Yeah, I always send one to my mother.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah, we have a What You Can Do section. We have the e-cards. We have flyers to print, and you can hang them around your neighborhood, and lots of social media ideas, mm-hmm. lots of ways to connect on your, you know, if you're on Facebook or Twitter, with images and other kinds of tools that you can use. So I think it's a great place to find out, you know, how you can spread the word. And also, we are going to be doing an outreach event. If you want to help us spread the word leading up to Mother's Day, we're going to be meeting on May 9th at 12 noon at the City Center SkyTrain Station entrance at Georgia and Granville. And you just have to look for the grieving cow. She's looking for her missing calf, Oliver. And we're going to be handing out flyers, and we'll have the cow ribbons available by donation. And it's just going to be a short one-hour outreach event to get people talking and thinking about the cow ribbon and about the suffering of dairy cow mothers.
Well, thank you so much, Sophie, for coming on the show today to speak with us about the Cow Ribbon Campaign. To find out more about the Cow Ribbon Campaign and to get your own cow ribbon for Mother's Day, please visit www.cowribbon.com.
Thank you so much, Allison.
You're welcome. So I just wanted to remind everyone, it's our biannual membership drive for spring, and we've got lots of great gift incentives for you, which I just wanted to reiterate. So if you donate now or in the next week or so, and you can do so by simply going to coopradio.org and make a secure donation there, or you can give us a call at 604-684-8494, and either Alyssa or Elon or maybe me will answer your call. And if either of you do it, please go out there too, if you're on the air, that is. So we will be here till 1:45 as well. That's 45 minutes after the show to take your call, 604-684-8494. Thank you to those who have donated already. And we've got some great book incentives that we will put you in the draw for to get your cow, or no, I was going to say your cow ribbon, to get your books. So got cow ribbon on the brain. Now we've got news. Go ahead.
You're listening to Animal Voices Radio Show here at 102.7 FM, CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. So the headlines for today, some uplifting stories, because I've had a pretty bad week, I don't know about anyone else. So the first story is that Burger King on Wednesday became the first major U.S. food chain to pledge that all of its eggs and pork will come from cage-free chickens and pigs by 2017. There's no question in my mind, especially on the heels of pink slime and BPA, that everyone in the food world is very concerned about consumer reaction, said food industry analyst Phil Lempert, referring to the beef-based food additive and the chemical used in plastic bottles and canned food. Burger King uses hundreds of millions of eggs and tens of millions of pounds of pork annually, and its decision could be a game-changing move in the supply business as a huge new market opens up for less horrendously, I dare not say humanely, raised food animals. So far this year, McDonald's and Wendy's, the number one and number two burger chains, said they asked their pork suppliers to outline plans for the elimination of gestation crates, but they have not yet set a timetable. Smithfield Farms and Hormel are committed to ending the use of crates by 2017. Walmart and Costco have transitioned their private label eggs to 100% cage-free. Unilever, which uses 350 million eggs a year in its Hellmann's mayonnaise brand, is switching to 100% cage-free eggs as well. This is an issue that just 4 to 5 months ago was not on the food industry's radar, said Paul Shapiro of the Humane Society in the U.S. chapter, the vice president for farm animal protection. Now it's firmly cemented into the mainstream in a way that I think few people have imagined. So that's definitely some good news. I mean, of course, as being kind of a vegan advocacy radio show, we were hoping that
kind of
move away
definitely
from it. But I mean, in the scale of degrees of suffering, it's better to have less suffering than more suffering when these questions are definitely involved.
It's pretty amazing how this is all happening all at once. It's really just snowballing. Like, it's like becoming a, like battery cages are unacceptable.
Well, in California in 2013, right? They're going to be completely phased out. I believe it's 2013. That's next year.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, what they've been saying is, of course, the market has been shifting. And so people have been, of course, wanting more of what they've quote unquote humane options. So, of course, you know, hopefully in this consumption based market, we can go towards more ethical alternatives, i.e. no usage of animals in our food products, if of course the market is the huge demanding point here. So the next really great story is actually based on the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals Act, which is from 1960. India's Union Ministry of Environment and Forests has issued guidelines to the University Grants Commission, Ministry of Health and Family Welfare, Pharmacy Council of India, and the Medical Council of India to discontinue dissection and experiments with live animals in universities, colleges, research institutes, hospitals, laboratories, and instead use alternatives like computer simulation, which is profoundly great news. The ministry says that the central government is duty-bound to use alternatives to avoid unnecessary suffering or pain to animals. It states that effective alternatives in the form of CDs, computer simulations, and mannequin models are available. They are not only effective as absolute replacements for animals in teaching anatomy or physiology, but are also superior learning tools in teaching a pharmacy or life sciences. The animal experiments should be stopped in all institutes except for the purpose of new molecular research. Sometimes in laboratories, a lot of work is repeated and animals become unnecessary victims. Only scientists researching on new molecular theory can experiment on animals. In medical and pharmacy colleges, there's unwanted cruelty towards animals which can be avoided. These guidelines mention imprisonment for 5 years and monetary penalty, said Mangal Jain, a nominee of the Institutional Animal Ethics Committee. India's decision to shift its reliance from harmful and often unreliable animal models to robust non-animal approaches for biomedical research and education is a major step in the right direction, and they are on a path to leadership and replacing animals in experiments, said Andrew Rowan, president of the Humane Society International, in a written statement. And I think this is, of course, fantastic news to see this
especially
movement
this week.
Definitely. I think it, of course, is in conjunction with the week of being the World Week for Animals and Laboratories, or alternatively named the World Week for Animals and Laboratory Liberation. And so that's been your headlines for today, Friday, April 27th, 2012.
Thank you so much, Elon. Today's feature interview is with Dr. Birute Mary Galdikas, who is the world's foremost authority on the orangutan. She is a scientist, conservationist, and educator. For almost four decades, Dr. Galdikas has studied and worked closely with the orangutans of Indonesian Borneo in their natural habitat. As president and one of the founders of Orangutan Foundation International, Dr. Galdikas has studied orangutans longer than any other person in human history and has worked ceaselessly to save orangutans and forests and to bring orangutans and their plight to the attention of the world. The mission of the Orangutan Foundation International is to support the conservation, protection, and understanding of orangutans and their rainforest habitat while caring for ex-captive orangutan orphans as they make their way back to the forest. Hello, Dr. Galdikas, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, the reason I wanted to bring you on the show today is because the plight of the orangutans has been recently brought to the public's attention, and reports indicate that this whole species could be wiped out in a matter of months or even weeks, I've read. And I know that the issues of poaching and habitat deforestation are continuing, but to start first, for our listeners who probably don't know a whole lot about orangutans, I would like to ask you for a primer on the orangutan. You have spent much of your life closely studying these creatures. Can you tell us some species facts about the orangutan, such as where they live in the wild, and divulge some insights into their natural habitats and behaviors in their living environments, please?
Well, orangutans are great apes. They are one of our closest living relatives in the animal kingdom. They share 97% of their genetic material with us. Chimpanzees, who are our closest animal relatives, share 99% or almost 99% of their genetic material with us. Orangutans are orange. The males can be very large. The males can be over 300 pounds in the wild. They are brachiators, which means that they have very long arms compared to the rest of their bodies. They are primarily fruit eaters. And unlike most other higher primates, they are solitary or semi-solitary in adulthood. That means they live alone, mothers with their young, but the males totally alone. And they spend 95% of their time in the tropical rainforest canopy in the jungles of Borneo and Sumatra, which are the only two places on this planet where they are found. So they're basically a relic species. Tens of thousands of years ago, they roamed, through southern China and throughout the entire island of Sumatra and even into Java. But now they're only found in Borneo, on the island of Borneo and the island of Sumatra. So they're found in two different countries, Malaysia, which shares Borneo with Indonesia and Brunei, and Indonesia in Sumatra.
Well, I understand that the orangutans they take the longest to grow up, I've read, and they're the slowest to reproduce, and that apart from humans who stay attached to their mothers for probably the longest amount of time of any species known, that the orangutan would be the second longest that stays close to his mother. Can you talk about the social and familial ties there between orangutans and their families?
Oh, absolutely. So orangutan females, on average, only give birth between 6 to 10 years. So where I work with orangutans, which is central Indonesian Borneo, the average birth interval is about 8 years. And that means that an orangutan female only has one infant every 8 years, and it isn't until she has her second infant that the older offspring, who is now 8 or 9 years old, begins to leave his or her mother's proximity and begins to set up his or her own home range. The female orangutans stay in the vicinity of their mother's home range at least where I work, their entire lives. Well, the males eventually go off and look for females and try to set up their home ranges some distance from her, wherever there is an opening in the tropical rainforest and there are not too many other males there. So an orangutan infant that will suckle, except not until he or she is no longer an infant, the orangutan juveniles may suckle up to 7 or 8 years. So that's a very close relationship between the mother. It's very intense, especially since orangutans are semi-solitary, they're solitary in the wild. So the mother orangutan is not going to meet up with many other orangutans as she travels through the forest with her infant or her juvenile.
Well, it's all very fascinating to learn about orangutans more than I probably ever knew before. So please tell us about the destruction and degradation of the rainforest in Borneo and Sumatra, which is the main reason that the orangutan is being threatened with extinction at this time. What are humans doing in these areas and why?
Well, the main problem orangutans face is habitat destruction. And along with this habitat destruction goes goes orangutan killing, orangutan poaching. So orangutans live in the tropical rainforest canopies of Borneo and northern Sumatra. They depend primarily on ripe fruit, but also flowers and leaves, and small vines, which are found in the canopy. So 95% of their food comes from the forest canopy. So they are arboreal. They do not have any special adaptations to life on the ground. They're very slow on the ground. A grown man or a grown woman can actually outrun them on a level piece of ground, a level piece or an open piece of level ground. So they're very vulnerable on the ground. So what's happening is the forests are being burned. Lose their homes, they lose the forest canopy, they're stuck on the ground, they have no food, so they start raiding palm oil plantations. And the main reason that the forests are being burned by humans is to establish, to clear the forest and to establish palm oil plantations. So they have a double whammy. Their forests are burned, they're stuck on the ground, and then they're killed. Crop raiders. So this is the reason that they're on the verge of extinction, is that people kill them. People now have an opportunity to kill them where they never did before. And even if they're not killed, they end up starving in these palm oil plantations because there's simply not enough food. And when I talk palm oil plantation, I'm not talking about a little garden. I'm talking about hundreds of thousands of hectares. Overall, millions of hectares that have been converted to palm oil plantation. So in Borneo, where I was last week, we rescued an orangutan female, a wild orangutan female, who was so thin, it was unbelievable. It was like she'd been a victim of Auschwitz or something. And the only thing that came out of her feces when she first defecated was fibers from the inner shoots of palm oil plants. And it was horrible. She had been tied up so brutally that when we untied her wrists, so we untied the rest of her body, she could not open her wrists. She could not open her fists. We literally had to feed her. Remember, this is a wild orangutan, by putting food directly into her mouth because she couldn't open her hands to grasp the food and put the food in her own mouth. It's terrible. It's just awful. So that is the double threat facing orangutans, and that's why they're going
extinct.
That's why on the verge of extinction.
I am curious to know about why these palm oil companies are being allowed by the government to pursue this destruction of the rainforest and animal habitats. As I understand it, isn't it illegal to be burning down the rainforest like this?
Well, I think there's laws against it, but obviously laws are not being enforced. And the real reason is greed. I mean, the amount of money that you can make by opening up a palm oil plantation is tremendous. I mean, it's somebody, you know, somebody said it's like having a license to print money. The palm oil is tremendously profitable. It's also ubiquitous. I mean, you know, we have to blame the Western consumer, because if you go into a supermarket in Canada or the United States, probably about 50% of the manufactured products, food products and other products, contain palm oil. So it's not just potato chips. It's not just milk. I mean, skim milk contains palm oil. It's not just margarine. I mean, I scoured the supermarkets of Vancouver trying to find a margarine that did not contain palm oil, and I ended up going back to butter and olive oil because there simply was not a margarine. I think I found one, and then I couldn't find it again. So it's in detergents, it's in toothpaste, it's in cooking oil. I mean, it is cooking oil. I mean, it's in so many things that, oh, it's in soap, that you really have to make a special effort to avoid it. So it's like, you know, I tweeted, I think it was yesterday, that palm oil is like the monster from the Black Lagoon. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't know when it's going to show up.
Well,
you know, I was eating an organic cookie the other day, and
there was palm oil.
And I thought I was safe, and then one of my sons pointed out that the last ingredient in the vegan cookie was palm oil. I mean, it's everywhere. You can't avoid it. It's horrible.
I've heard that there are sustainable sources of palm oil that don't affect the orangutans. Do you know if this is true or not?
Of course it's not true. It's a public relations kind of thing. You know, there is no palm oil, as far as I know, that is sustainable at this particular moment in time. There are some companies that are trying to do better. But, you know, if you burn a village, kill all its inhabitants, and then plant a garden on top of it and claim that it's organic because you're not using fertilizer, I mean, does it really make it organic or sustainable? I mean, it's sort of like what palm oil does. It destroys the forest, mm-hmm. and then after they planted the plants, you know, and the oil palms have grown, now they manage it in a sustainable manner, supposedly. But the orangutans are gone. The mainly sun bears are wiped out. All those tropical rainforest ecosystems are gone, and we're left with a monoculture that basically has pigs in it, and some rodents, and cobras, and a few birds. And is this sustainable? Not sustainable. It's not sustainable for the planet. It's not sustainable for ecosystems. It might be sustainable in some very rigid way of accounting for it, in that, you know, some palm oil plantations now have a zero-tolerance policy where they will not allow their employees to kill members of endangered species or harm them. And I salute those palm oil companies that are doing this. In fact, we're training one of them on the zero-tolerance policy. But nonetheless, that doesn't make it sustainable, not in terms of ecosystems, not in terms of orangutan populations. How is it sustainable if the orangutan populations in the area have been totally wiped out?
Right. Well, that's what I'm here to ask you, and I'm seeing exactly what you're talking about. How drastically are the wild orangutan populations declining? It's being called a global tragedy, what is happening right now. Can you tell us, in your 40 years of observation, how have you seen changes in the populations? And when we're told that the orangutans are now facing extinction, is it really within a matter of months or even weeks that this may happen?
No. You see, this is the problem. The problem is that, you know, it's not weeks or months. What's happening is that in a certain area in Sumatra, yes, a local population is in the process of being wiped out. And this is a major tragedy. This should not be allowed to happen. And it's more what's going to happen in this area in the future. So Yeah, I mean, everywhere orangutans are in dire, dire straits. Their populations have plummeted. But, you know, the process of extinction is going to take a little while, simply because orangutans are solitary creatures. So, you know, I think sometimes that we're going to come to a point where most orangutans will be wiped out from the face of the planet. Mm-hmm. But somewhere in the mountains.
I'm interested to know what types of conservation efforts are being made for the orangutans, such as by organizations as OFI, or perhaps even the Indonesian government, although that doesn't seem like they're doing much. Can you talk about that?
Well, I think our last hope ultimately is with the Indonesian government and the Malaysian mm-hmm. governments. Problem is that they want their cake and eat it too. So they want the palm oil, the revenue from palm oil, and they want the orangutans to be saved. So it's this balancing act that they conduct. And, you know, I think there's a lot of goodwill on the part of the Indonesian government. And, you know, I've been to Sabah a few times, and I know and I've met officials in the Sabah government, and I know that there's a lot of goodwill and effort being made to save orangutans and help orangutans. But the problem is that we're facing the global economy, and the global economy is that powerful, almighty force that even the President of the United States can't face down. So it's really up to the consumer, especially the North American consumer, who does have a lot of choice, not to buy palm oil. And our conservation organization is Orangutan Foundation International. We just established a foundation in Canada, the Orangutan mm-hmm. Foundation Canada. We have been working in the field for 41 years, and we try to rescue individual orangutans, like the wild female that I just mentioned. And we have over 340 orangutan orphans that we are rehabilitating to life in the wild. We are buying forest. We are literally buying forest. And we're buying it a hectare at a time. And so far, we have bought over 8 square kilometers of forest. This is forest that would have gone up in smoke mm-hmm. If the palm oil plantations had bought it. We work with the Indonesian government, forestry department, to patrol and protect one national park, that's Tanjung Puting National Park, and we are working with entrepreneurs to try and save more forest under the RED initiative, RED Plus, R-E-D-D, and that's an initiative that is trying to, it's called RED, R-E-D-D, and it's reducing emissions for deforestation and forest degradation. And what it allows is for business people to sell carbon offsets in order to protect the forest from being burned or being destroyed. So OFI, and now with its new sister organization, OF Canada, has been working very, very hard. So we try to do as much as we can, and certainly over the years we have saved a great deal of forest. One of the things that we were able to do is persuade the Indonesian government to set up a wildlife reserve called Lemangau, where we could actually release wild-born ex-captive orangutans to life in the wild. And the reason that this wildlife reserve is so important is because it was scheduled to become palm oil. Mm-hmm. It was scheduled to be given to palm oil concessions. There were two, expired logging concessions. And in Indonesia, what frequently happens is the logging companies, once they finish logging, they don't clear cut. Once they finish selectively logging the forest concessions, Then what they do is they change their names and become palm oil companies, and then clear, usually by fire, their old forest concessions and plant palm oil, make even more money. So, you know, this is what we've been doing, and I hope that people support us. Because we certainly need more resources.
We definitely support you here at Animal Voices. Thank you so much for coming on the show today to shed light on these issues facing the orangutans. For more information on the orangutans and the work that Dr. Galdikas does at Orangutan Foundation International, please check out their website at orangutan.org.
You've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, on unceded Coast Salish territories. Next week on the show, we'll be talking with Abraham De Leon, professor at the Department of Educational Leadership and Policy Studies at the University of Texas at San Antonio. Dr. De Leon intended to deliver a paper on critical animal studies at the American Educational Research Association conference here in Vancouver, but was denied entry into Canada. We will also be chatting with Melissa Matlow, Campaigns Manager for Humane and Sustainable Agriculture of the World Society for the Protection of Animals, about their recently published report entitled What's on Your Plate? The Hidden Costs of Industrial Animal Agriculture. We here at Animal Voices Show ask you to keep connected with us by signing up for our Facebook page at Animal Voices Vancouver and joining us on Twitter, Animal Voices YVR. Please do send your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook, or you can also email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Also, please do check out our website at www.animalvoices.org, where our old shows can be downloaded. And if you appreciate the work that we're doing here at Animal Voices every week, you can show us your support by making a donation to us at Animal Voices at Co-op Radio, because we really do rely on your donations to keep the show on the air. So in order to make a donation, you can give us a call as soon as the show is over, which is about going to be in a couple minutes, at 604-684-8494. So that's 604-684-8494. And we'll be here for about 45 minutes to answer anybody's phone calls. So in honor of World Week for Animals and Laboratories, we'll be playing Nebo Hex and Jarbo with Don't Kill the Animals. Stay tuned now for Radio EcoShock, and thanks for listening to Animal Voices today. It's a